The Bible is not a romantic novel that we can transport ourselves back into. We can read the Bible and know that God has put eternity in our heart, but our day of salvation is now, and we need to take it seriously. But it's easy to get caught up in the here and now, and as we look around, sometimes we kind of feel sorry for ourselves in the stuff that we've been through in 2020 and now 2021. But has there ever been a time in history where those who desired to follow a godly life have had an easy time? Is it easy for you to think, oh, if I had only lived in the time of Christ, or the Apostle Paul, I just loved to sit at his feet and hear what he had to say, or Daniel, I would have cheered Daniel on at the lion's den, or I would have been there with Abraham, or I would have been there with Noah. I'd have driven nails into that ark. That would have been the greatest thing. Or maybe it's the 60s. If I had the 60s or the 50s, you know, those cars, oh, those are something else. Is there an imaginary time that appeals to you and you think, oh, if I could just have been back in that time, and if God had called me back then, I would be doing much better, and I would be a much better Christian, I would be a much better person, and I just feel a little bit disadvantaged because I've been called and I'm here in 2021. Are we disadvantaged because there are so many pressures on our time and on our money and on our health and our mental well-being and the stresses of COVID and whatever else might be in your life? Is it possible that God did not call you at the right time? Did God make a mistake? You know, I think we look at our own shortcomings and we think, you know, we have these pressures and stresses and I have so many things to overcome, and we realize it's a lifelong battle. And you're right, it is. And sometimes we get down on ourselves because we feel like we're not making progress, and if we were just at another place in history, it would be so much better. Who has had the advantage? Those who have gone before us? Those that will come after us? Or those of us who are here right now? And if you could answer that question, does it matter? You are here now, and this is our time to overcome and to conquer salvation. It's our time to do what God has directed us to do and called us to do. You are creating your own legacy right now, just as those in the Bible created their legacy as they walked through the times that they had to deal with. You are here now, and this is what you have to deal with. And so we need not look back and whine about where we wish we could have been. We have to do something about what we have right now. So has there ever been a time when people of God had it easy? Maybe there would have been a better time to live, and maybe there would have been a better time to be called. And it kind of comes down to a simple question. Is God fair? Is what God has done to us fair? So let me answer that real quickly and say that if God were fair, he wouldn't have sent his son Jesus Christ to the earth to die for our sins. So it's not much of a conversation because everything God does is always tipped towards him on who has sacrificed the most. So we don't have to think, is God fair? We just know that God is more than fair. He loves us and he has our best interest in mind and he's doing what's best for us. I was graciously reminded of a sermonette I gave a few years ago, I didn't look it up, but it featured the acronym BUSY, B-U-S-Y. And that acronym, as I said it then, was buried under Satan's yoke. And I think the word fairly represents what we go through today. And at this point in history, not everyone, but many people feel like they're just buried in stuff and things to do and things that make their life complicated. But you know, mankind has always had 24 hours in a day. It's always been sun up to dark. It's always been four seasons. And things have rolled by. And depending on where the Bible characters were in their life and where they lived, they've always had to deal with rain and cold and snow and sleet and things that are uncomfortable. But what would their days have looked like? You know, we think we're busy. I want to take a look back and see what their days might have looked like. Were their days leisurely? Did they have lots of free time? Were they able to just twiddle their thumbs out by their riverbed and just watch the trees grow or watch the grass grow? When would they have had time to pray and study? Oh, wait a minute. They didn't have a Bible. Technicality. How did those individuals pass on, and how did they learn about God? Well, they must have looked around. They saw God in the creation, and God at times inspired people to say and do things. Sometimes the information was passed down in a manuscript, and those manuscripts were not only read, but they were memorized, and they were repeated, and they were taught to their children. And those, it's fascinating to think about how much memorization was done back then, and how little we do today. We might reason life would have been easier if that would have been the case. So let's look around. Let's look at some of the scenarios our forefathers would have had to have gone through to be where, their time and their day. And let's look at the scenarios that they would have had to work through. And then you can think about your life and compare it to their life to ours. And you can decide if they were busy. Did they make excuses? Certainly they were human, and we all like to make excuses. And maybe they didn't know they were busy, but maybe they were busier than they realized. You know, God doesn't change, but a lot has changed since the time of Adam. Requirements for salvation, though, have not changed. The opportunities he would have given to one, he would have given to all of them, and God didn't change the rule book. Whether it was codified and whether it was in a Bible with multiple chapters or not, the rules have not changed. So Abraham, all the prophets, they all had the same rule book, whether it was in writing or whether it was memorized or whether it was a scroll, whatever it was, that's what they had to work by. And in spite of the challenges, whatever those challenges were, God was able to work with a small group of individuals through all the years, as they're recorded in the Bible. He was able to work with a group of individuals, and some were they submitted to him, and it was accounted them as for righteousness' sake. And that the account there that I'm speaking of is Abraham, who believed God, and it was accounted to him as right for righteousness. So he was doing the right things based on the circumstances, and God approved of that. So again, things have changed over the years, but the rule book has not changed. So let's go to Genesis 3, and we're going to start in verse 16. We're going to just review some of the things that would have been kind of like a day in the life of some people in the Bible. So Galatians 3:16, this is after Adam and Eve had taken of the tree of life, or taken of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, I should say, and they had sinned, and God was not pleased, and they have just gotten themselves kicked out of the Garden of Eden. And so Genesis 3 and verse 16, God says, "To the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. In pain you shall bring forth children, Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. And to Adam he said, because you have heeded the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree of which I commanded you, saying, you shall not eat it. And here is what he says to Adam. Cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the herb of the field. This is an interesting phrase that I didn't go into, but there's something about what in this curse that the herb of the field is mentioned. In the sweat of your face, you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return. Unless you come into God's church, and then everything is going to be hunky-dory. No, it doesn't say that. This curse is on all people for all time, for as long as mankind is here on the earth. I find it interesting, verse 21 here, that the first thing that happened after this curse, so we don't have a lot of information that went on before this, but in verse 21, also for Adam and his wife, the Lord God made tunics of skin and clothed them. So it's interesting that the first thing that happens is that God covers them up. And and then he runs them out of the garden, and you know it's just be interesting to know how God did this, because God made tunics for them, and yet it doesn't have any record of how God did that. Did he supernaturally tan the hides on these animals and put it over their bodies? I don't know. But they didn't have home economic skills. They didn't have needle and thread and fabric to work with. There was certainly no choice of patterns. I suppose you could have zebra or something else, but there was no book Sewing for Dummies. But they didn't have anything to work with. They were in the garden, and there was no Ace Hardware. There was no, you know, Amazon.com. There was nothing. What did they have to work with? And you think of where they started. What were they doing all day? Well, the Lord God made tunics. So God had the ability to turn the animals with skins into tunics. And he was able to do that somehow. And he made it happen. But the clothing industry then takes off. And my point in belaboring this is to help you think about what they did all day. You know what you do all day. Was it any different than what they did? Adam and Eve had not had, they didn't have a bunch of distractions. They didn't have a bunch of screens to look at. And yet, with so little around them, there's no, go to the movies, go to the bar, go to anything like that. So there were no distractions, and they still sinned. They still had too much time on their hands, and they didn't use their time well. Apparently, it's not about how busy we are. It's about how we use our time. And it's about what we think about and how we use our mental energies and what we allow our hands and minds to do that gets us in trouble. So verse 24, so he drove out the man, and he placed cherubim at the east of the Garden of Eden and a flaming sword which turned every way to guard the way to the tree of life. So they're driven out, and they're driven out with the clothes on their back. They have one tunic each, and they're sent out the gate. Now they're outside the garden. I can only imagine how difficult it would be to start with nothing and figure everything out. There's, you know, what did God tell them? What did he share with them? Did he give them a mind that was fully capable of you know, knowing all engineering and all everything about water and everything about horticulture and all these different things? Did God just say, see you later, you know, you're gone, you're out of here? Did he just say, go figure it out, or did he help them? I don't know. But yeah, how cooperative was God? Or did, if Adam and Eve had a clean slate and they didn't have anything to work with and they had to think, like, well, what do I do now? I'm hungry. Here's, and like, how do they know to put something? I mean, God, I'm not, they were smart. God gave them what they needed when they needed it, and there was some period of time between when they were created and when they were sinned and sent out, but we don't know how cooperative God was. We don't know, like, okay, where did they get the first knife? Where did they get these things that we might take for granted? There were no models, no handbooks, no Google, no YouTube. You know, how did they do this? What do you think their days were filled with? I submit to you that they were filled with finding food, clothing, and shelter. Necessities all day, every day. And has anything changed? Is that what we do in our lives in general? We're just busy taking care of what seems to be the most important thing at the time. But God communicated with him. Let's go to chapter 4 and verse 2. Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, and he said, I have acquired a man from the Lord. And she bore again, and this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep. Wait a minute. How did he know that sheep needed to be kept? Who told him that? Did they figure it out? Did they realize the sheep were huddled out in a mass and or maze and, you know, it's stuck in the thickets or whatever, and that somebody, that the sheep were too dumb to take care of themselves, that he had to go keep them? Why did he do that? How did he do it? Who taught him? But Cain was the tiller of the ground. What? Tiller of the ground? How would you know to dig in the ground, and what would you dig with? Well, we dig with plows, right? We hook them behind tractors, or they might have, well, you say, I put it behind an oxen or something. Wait, where'd the metal come from? Where'd the harness come from? Who skinned the tree and cut it down? How did they get these things? And how did they have the smarts to put them together? I find that interesting. How would that have worked? Who taught them how to do these things, or did they have to figure it all out? I think their days were busy. Like, okay, maybe God said, you need to plant. Okay, let's figure out how to plant. And so they had to, like, how would you know to go, oh, let's create a shovel and let's just dig right there and we'll find iron ore. Well, what if they did? What would they heat it up with? What would they put it in? How would they have a melting pot? How would they have an anvil to beat on? Where'd the hammer come from? Who created all these things? And I don't think God did. So God had to communicate to them. What he did exactly, we don't know. They might have had to figure it out. So in the process of time, chapter 4, verse 3, in the process of time, well, how long was that? You know, these people were living 700, 800, 900 years. Process of time could have been decades or it could have been centuries. And at some point, they're learning, they're taught about offerings. So that didn't go so well, and Cain ended up killing Abel. And you wonder, where was God? Well, God, I don't want to say God pretends, but he comes up alongside Cain and he says, why are you angry? Why is your countenance fallen? Don't you know if you do well, you'll be accepted? And if you don't, that sin lies at the door? And you know, Cain tries to lie his way out of it, and it doesn't work. And so, verse 17, 4 and verse 17. Verse 16. And then Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and dwelt in the land of Nod. So they have to learn cartography in the middle of this. So, like, they have to name. You don't say, like, go over the hill there, and there by this. So they ended up calling that place over the hill by the rock or the tree. They ended up, okay, that's the land of Nod. Well, why did you call it Nod? Because I threw my head at it. I don't know. But it's like they're learning. Like we think, oh, you just grab a map and you look at it and you get the coordinates and then you just go there. But they had to figure these things out. And again, what did they do all day? I don't know. They had everything to do all day. And how, they'd work sun up till sundown and they didn't have light, so they couldn't work too far into the night. So verse 17, and Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch, and he built a city, and called and then he called the name of the city after his son Enoch. So now it's obvious that there's some people, enough people around to be more than one or two tents, and so now they're building a city. So suddenly they have to figure out, what are the traffic patterns? You know, are there stop signs? You know, what's like they, somebody, nobody, you don't have any precedents to work on at this point in the earth's history. It's like, where do you come up with the city planning and zoning? Like, oh, you're going to put a barn right beside my tent? You can't do that. And it would just seem like they would have lots of stumbling, or they are really communicative and they're trying hard not to offend one another. But I think they had a lot of things to learn and a lot of aggravation. I mean, Cain killed Abel. That was he was aggravated enough to do that. So he builds a city and gives it a name. Verse 19, then Lamech took for himself two wives. The name of one was Adah, and the name of the second was Zillah. And Adah bore Jabal, and he was the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. His brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all those who play the harp and flute. Well, that's interesting. So now somebody happened to be out in the field, and they were bored, and they were tapping on. One was tapping on a tree and the other one was tapping on a rock, and they decided that if you line the rocks up just right, that you could get tunes to come out of it. Well, then they used their imagination and said, well, if we hollow out this thing and like they burn out a canoe, right? So they hollow out this log and then they beat on it, and now they have a different kind of instrument, and they're like, oh, this is really creative. Like, you're starting with nothing. What are you doing all day? You're figuring this stuff out. And it would have been interesting in some ways to be there, but it would have been a lot of work. Verse 22, and as for Zillah, she bore Tubal-Cain, an instructor in every craftsman in bronze and iron. And again, where did they get the bright idea to make or to come up with bronze and iron and to come up with the formulas to do those things? Somebody had to be thinking outside the box. Somebody, either God's feeding them the information, or they're really smart and they're really catching on quickly. Or maybe the ore is laying on top of the ground. There's a pile here labeled iron ore and some bronze over here. I don't think it was that way. Chapter 4, verse 25. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bore a son named Seth. For God has appointed another seed for me instead of Abel, whom Cain killed. Verse 26, and as for Seth, To him also a son was born, and he named him Enosh. Now here's a very interesting phrase in the middle of all this that's going on. Then men began to call on the name of the Lord. Does that mean they had not called on him previously? I don't know. But there are some men in this early history of man being on this earth, some men saw fit to call on the name of the Lord. I think God would have had to open their mind somehow. God had to work with them, and they had to take the responsibility and apply it to what they were seeing around them, what they were learning, how they were growing. But men began to call on the name of the Lord. Chapter 5, in verse 21, and we read, Enoch lived 65 years and begot Methuselah. And after he begot Methuselah, Enoch walked with God 300 years. So here, in the midst of all these things they're learning and the processes they're coming up with and their busy lives, there are some few individuals who see fit to call on the name of the Lord or to walk with God. And if you look at the ratio, who knows what the ratio was, but it was a lot of people who weren't calling on the name of the Lord to a very few that were. And in our day, what's the ratio? It's a lot to not very many. So Enoch walked with God 300 years. Verse 28 is an interesting statement, chapter 5, verse 28. And Lamech lived 182 years and had a son. And he called his name Noah. In quotes, this one will comfort us concerning our work and the toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord has cursed. So they knew they were working under a curse. They knew it when he named Noah. So again, there must be some communication with God. They didn't figure that out on their own. They knew that they were in distress, and that the things that Adam and Eve had done, was affecting their lives, and they knew that they were under that curse. Chapter 6 and verse 5, then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was evil continually. Does that sound similar to what we have to deal with? Headlines are distressing. Maybe you could blame it on things that are going on right now with viruses, but it's a very distressing time. There's a lot of evil in this world. So there was evil continually, and the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. The Lord was grieved. God said, I don't want to say he had his head in his hands, and God is all-knowing, and he knew where it was going to go, but he was still grieved in his heart. Let's call it figurative, or it was real. It was not a made-up emotion. So the Lord said, I will destroy man from whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things, and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. Oh, but verse 8. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. So here's one person. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Verse 9, this is the genealogy of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations, and Noah walked with God. That's encouraging. So in the midst of all of this wickedness, there's a man who walks with God. Brethren, that can be us. in your town, you can be in the midst of whatever the situation is, and you can be the one that walks with God, and when everybody else is going downstream, you can be going upstream. Verse 11, the earth was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So God looked upon the earth, and indeed it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And I would take that to mean that all flesh included Noah, which means, in my mind, means Noah sinned here and there, but he recognized his sin and he did something about it. He found grace in the eyes of the Lord and he walked with God. If he made a mistake, he repented and he changed and he went forward with the right direction. Verse 13, and God said to Noah, the end of all flesh is come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them from the earth. And he tells them to make an ark. He gives instructions. In verse 22, thus Noah did according to all that the Lord commanded, and it emphasizes, so he did. So if God gives you something to do, and if he opens your mind, you need to do it. You need to walk through the door, walk down the path, whatever it takes. If God gives you and leads you to something, you need to make sure you do it. So they definitely had their hands full. There was plenty of things for them to do that filled their time. And in the very beginning, Adam and Eve for roughly 9 months wouldn't have had anybody to help them if they wanted to build a house or a fort or a covering. You know, it's like, Eve, Adam, you know, help me, help me, help me. So they didn't have cranes. They didn't have things that we would take for granted. It's like, oh, just get a team of guys and stand that wall up. So that's as more people got on the earth, they would have had more help, that's for sure. So life was hard. They lived, they worked, and they worked, and they worked, and they worked. How would God fit into their lives? What would that look like? Well, I guess they would have to look for every opportunity to see God and what was going on around them. And God could certainly work with them, and as things started to be recorded and written on scrolls, they would have had opportunity to review that. So it's, again, we don't know what all God gave them. But as time moves on, then you end up with the Tower of Babel and confusion. And then, lo and behold, here comes the story of Abraham and Lot, two families in the midst of all this wickedness. God worked with them and got them out of there when the time was right. And again, you have all this wickedness going on around, and God's working with a handful of people. And brethren, that handful is us. Then you move down to the story of the children of Israel in Goshen. In the midst of Egypt, there was Joseph doing the right thing. And as time went along, there were certain individuals that were willing to do what the command was for the Passover, and they put the blood on the doorpost and the lentil in obedience to God. But even those people, as time went along, disobeyed and ended up dead in the desert. So people have always had a difficult time following God and doing what he says. Let's go to Daniel 1, verse 3. I want to emphasize Daniel's life. Because, again, I don't think anybody that's following God through all of history has ever had it easy. So Daniel 1 and verse 3, imagine being in captivity. Imagine however this works, and they're herding out masses of people, and the children are forcibly taken away from their parents, and if their parents were even there. Daniel 1 and verse 3, I'll get there. And the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. So in the midst of all of this captivity and going into a foreign land, there were individuals that still had their, call it, wits about them. They were still gifted in wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, and had ability to serve. So in the midst of whatever chaos is going on, we can still be a light. We can still be the obvious representative of a way of life that is not represented by the chaos going on around us. We can be that light. We can be the light that's not set under the bushel. So your life can be complicated and busy. Your life can be complicated and busy. It can be overly complicated, and you can still obey God. There's never a time when you have an excuse like, oh, well, you know, think of the Daniel, you know, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The things that they went through would just seem like, surely God could have given them a pass on that. Surely, well, God did. God took care of them. And so they were still able to obey God. They did not bow down. And they were able to obey God and do the right thing in the midst of the trouble. And I don't see things in the New Testament getting any better. Life was time-consuming. Walking everywhere you went. Get in a boat. Go you cross the lake. Go, you know, grab a donkey. Okay, we're going to be going 2 miles an hour for the next two. No central heat. No running water. No things that we would think would be so important. And then even after the book of Revelation is written, in my mind, the humanity went downhill from there. And there comes a time in the 1400s, 1500s, you have guys like Galileo and Isaac Newton and Einstein. Einstein's a little later than that. But there were men that had intelligence, and I suppose women too, but the guys seemed to get the credit back then. They developed the ability to build great things, either looking into outer space or things of electricity or things of, we might call them technology. They were the introduction to what we have nowadays. And it was, they had to think outside the box. They didn't go to Google and figure it out. They didn't go to YouTube. They had to look at the stars. They go, wait a minute, didn't I just see that a year ago or a month ago? And they had to figure these things out. And they had to truly work, and it would have been a daylight to dark situation. Moving along, you know, we have this thing called knowledge explosion. So there used to be a time when it would double every so many thousand years, and then it was every 125 years, and now I was trying to figure out what it was, and a couple of the websites said it's every 12 hours, and I want them to prove it to me, but I don't think they're probably going to do that. But so much knowledge is now irrelevant. Just because we come up with new things doesn't mean everything else is still relevant. But the thing that really made the difference as we got into these various figures of inventions is that Gutenberg, when he invented the printing press, that was the time when the Bible could now be duplicated and mass-produced and spread. And we are recipients of that technology, of all the things that have happened in our lives, or not in our lives, but in the past few hundred years. That is the one that probably has opened the door for us to understand God on a mass level, and it's certainly something to be grateful for and thankful for. Never before in history had that been possible. So now we're able to just flip to the Bible and read it and know what God said. And of course, we do argue about exactly what it says, but there are so many languages, so many paraphrases, so much commentary about it now. And if you don't want to read it, you can have it played to you. It's a wonderful time nowadays to be able to understand and hear God's word. So we need to be grateful for the things that make our lives easier. You know, we talk about toilets and running water and refrigeration and electricity. These things all complicate our lives, but in terms of the ability to understand God and know what God is doing and to see him working in the world, we have a better vision of that now. Even the technology that we have today, being able to watch webcasts and such, is a wonderful blessing that people had never had before. And we are recipients of it. So Daniel 12 and verse 4, I'll just quote it to you. It says, "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. And many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased." And we're recipients of that. Knowledge, good knowledge and bad knowledge, there's just a lot of information going around now. So we're very blessed to live at this time. And yes, it gets hard at times, but God has said there's no temptation, no situation's going to be so big that we are not going to be able to work through it. No temptation has overtaken you except as common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. And with that temptation, he will make a way of escape. So we don't have to worry that things are going to go too fouled up, that God's out of control. And he's also said, be strong and of good courage, and that he's never going to leave or forsake us. We can take those things to the bank. And we can know that he's got our back. He loves us, and he's picked us out of humanity. Just like Jesus said to the disciples as he picked them, follow me. And they stopped what they were doing, and they turned, and they followed him. And it was no problem in their minds. So, but if we could just believe God, if we could just do what he tells us to do, we would be so much better off. So it's not productive to sit around and kind of pine away our time thinking, oh, if I could only have lived back in the Middle Ages or the Renaissance or this or that. We need to look at our own lives and to think about what we can be doing right now. Yes, sometimes it's hard work. Yes, sometimes it's frustrating. But that's why we're able to get together, and we have a telephone, and we have emails. We can encourage one another. We can make the best of the various things that mess with us, and we can show love to one another. Like, how could you're out in the middle of the desert somewhere? You don't even see anybody. How can you get together? But we have so many ways of getting together and encouraging one another. We're all on the path to God's kingdom, and whatever path we're on, God is giving it to us. He's laid it out for us, and we're not in the age of the patriarchs. We're not in the age of the minor prophets or New Testament church. We are where we are today with the same God in heaven, with the same rule book, and we have the same humanness and human nature as our predecessors did, and we have the same opportunity to make the right decisions as we face each of our little battles. So it's this different storyline, same director, same potential. We all have the potential to be in God's family. Let us not be jealous of another generation, but live your own life. Leave your own legacy. doing the right things as you come and meet them, and who knows how the Bible's going to get, whether it's this is version one and there'll be an addendum to it, who knows? But live your life humbly and don't worry if you grew up on the wrong side of the tracks or that you had humble beginnings that nobody would understand or that you're the weak of the world or that God wouldn't understand. Nobody understands where I came from. Yes, God understands, and yes, God has it under control. Never underestimate God's ability to move you along to his kingdom. Live your life to show God you care and that you mean business. Each and every person that's ever lived has had their failures and their weak points. And they either repented and went forward or they didn't and it didn't go so well for them. But God's heard it all. God's watched it all. God knows what our potential is, and he knows that without him, that we would be nothing. And when we realize that we're weak and we're human, we go to him in repentance, we ask forgiveness, and God forgives, and God gives us the chance to get up off the ground, get up off our knees, and keep going. He can forgive all, no matter what people have done, and no one has the advantage. No one has the disadvantage. God is big enough that he can forgive each and every one of us, whatever we have done, whatever thing has causing us to think that we don't want to be here in this life, that we should be somewhere else. God is big enough that he can forgive that sin and help you to go forward. So our best time to be called by God is the time that he offers it to you. And for us, that time is now. Men and women throughout the Bible made the best of God's calling, and it has been recorded for us. And they were the minority in all the people that were there, and we are the minority. For us, our time to shine is now. Take advantage of that calling and don't treat it lightly. The reward is great. And just for some homework, I encourage you to read Hebrews 11 and 12.